Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. And good Friday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber at the New York Stock Exchange. Markets are going to try to hang on to their gains for the week as Dow futures, you see, down about 700. Coronavirus cases now number 100,000 around the world as investors ask what more can central banks do. Europe's down more than 3%. 10-year yield did touch 69 basis points. Oil down 4% as Russia's balking on additional cuts. So futures are pointing to further declines despite the jobs growth today, smashing expectations for February. The economy added 273,000 jobs during the month versus the expected 175. Unemployment rate 3.5. Wall Street, of course, looking to close out a turbulent week. That 10-year did tumble below 70 basis points for the first time ever as investors look for safety amid fears. Revisions too, Jim, on the jobs number. Not bad, but people are calling it the least important jobs number in a long time.
Yeah, I don't want to go there. I'm going to say the opposite. I'm going to say that when you come in with a head of steam, at least you got some possibilities that we're not going to go immediately into the recession, just because there were you don't hire them and then lay them off the next day. I mean, you look at the 53,000 jobs in food services and drinking places. That's an extraordinary number. Well, are we going to fire all those people?
Not right away.
So maybe you have.
But there seems to be a growing belief that we are going to have a recession.
Right. But I'm saying this makes it so it's
because of what has been a drastic shutdown in what we've talked about every day here for the last 2 weeks.
We're a service economy, and it's service that's under attack, not manufacturing. China was manufacturing here, travel, leisure, dining out, buying houses.
It would be nice to have imagined a world without Corona, and this number would have been proof
interest rates
for the rally that we had up until recently.
You would sell gold and interest rates would be soaring. It's obviously you're buying gold and interest rates going down. It's almost as if, I used to trade bonds all the time. It's almost as if bonds are manipulated.
Yeah,
how do you manipulate the U.S. Treasury?
You wouldn't think you could on the 2-year, but the moves are so dramatic that there are some people talking about the idea that there's some macro funds doing something out there.
Doesn't it feel like it? I mean, I was up at 3 to look at the stuff.
And I don't know.
Right at that time, I mean, everything's trading. Bonds weren't that bad, so to speak, meaning interest rates, it's so bizarre to say this, were higher and ticks. The S&P was down 27. Then I work out, and I come back, and the S&P's down 79. And I say to myself, did anything really happen?
Does that force those? Does 0.742 force the Fed's hand in some way, Jim?
Well, that's what they want, right? They want the triple whammy. They want to make money on the 2. They want to make money on the 10. They want to make money on the Fed funds. They being funds that just think, you know what? I can take advantage of this. I'll take advantage of the fear. I'll profiteer.
That's a shocking move. Maybe.
Well, look, it's
getting the equity market.
How much
move there is just.
Well, what that says is that there's going to be a shutdown in the economy. Yes. And how long can we, Jason Furman, great piece this morning, how long can we last? You know, unless you put money right in the hands of people. There are lots of businesses that are hand to mouth, but there are also businesses. I look at this versus 2008. The balance sheets are incredible. Now, no one's going to care about that, but they should.
Then what is going on with high yield and investment grade CDX spreads? Highest in a year. Yeah, that was the people said that was the scariest part of yesterday. Was the feeling of credit as opposed to stocks.
Right, and we probably can't see exactly what's going to be hurt except for the obvious, which is the airlines, the cruise ships.
Well, if you're in any way a highly levered entity related to the travel and leisure industry, you've got serious trouble.
Yeah. I'd hang myself with my tie, except for I don't have
one. Levered up your balance sheet.
Yeah, I meant joke.
There are deals out there that people are concerned about as well. Will they call force majeure on some of these deals?
Is this the right time for Xerox to lever up with UBS? That makes a lot of sense, right? The fees are so great, David. The banks need them. Don't you ever think that the fees aren't great there?
The fees would be significant. HP would be buying back an enormous amount of stock if they don't do it.
No fees. 6 cents. No fees,
David. That's sort of separate from what we're talking
about. Why? Greed is separate? Greed's not, was
greed
it just all fear?
Fear seems to be taking the lead.
Well, we have a little greed. Good to have a little normalcy from Wall Street. This is the right time to lever up. That's what you want, a really bad balance sheet of a company that makes these. This is a really important thing.
By the way, Enrique Lores yesterday,
I love him.
Did tell me that they are seeing, anecdotally, he said, increases in PC sales because of
the at-home
all the
economy.
Staying home.
All right,
and
so
they need
maybe
to upgrade to have the right video capability on their PCs at home. If in fact we do move to more people working
from
home,
Okta. Okta's up big because that's what it does, facilitates. But these are the needle in the haystack. Stock market is difficult.
Yep. And we've been talking about Facebook, for example, as a tool people would use at home, stay-at-home stock. Today, Needham cuts numbers because, in their view, when you're half of global display advertising, that's an easy thing for companies to cut back on.
Right. I mean, look, I think there's a lot of decisions that are made, assuming that this is the bubonic plague. I don't think that. By the way, plague years, really good. Daniel Defoe. Like Robinson Crusoe.
Oh, okay.
Journal of the Plague Year.
Got it.
Very good, because it puts this in perspective. You want perspective? You have to go back. You have to go back to books that were written that are amazing. You can't look at this stuff. I've got 17 different the viral experts all saying different things. I go to the Journal of Plague Year and I get a little.
That is part of the problem, Jim, is that there seems to be no consistency, although there are a handful of people who are actually reading the primary material coming out of China.
There's some good stuff out of China.
And they're not particularly sanguine.
There's nothing to be sanguine about. But I'm just saying, it seems to be, again, we're not experts, the older and the not well.
Yeah, but there are some people who are not in that cohort who are getting sick, very sick. And some dying as well.
There's no doubt about it. But
this is not the flu.
So let's say it's 350,000 people in America.
Serious.
Let's say it's 350,000 people. That's the worst case that I've heard. Right? It's terrible. We'll get through it. It's terrible.
Oh, I've heard much larger cases. There's people who think 40 to 70% of the U.S. population is
dead. No, I meant die.
Yeah, well, do the numbers.
I just did the numbers. Let's move on.
I mean, as we've been saying, it's not the number of people themselves who are getting sick. It's the measures people are taking to avoid spread.
Right.
You got states of emergency in three states, California, Maryland, Washington. Schools are closed in Seattle. 2,700 in quarantine in New York City alone.
Let me just distinguish my friend David. I am not minimizing this. I just...
No, you have not been all along.
The numbers I've read were 350. Nobody knows. Well, that's
exactly
the problem.
However,
that's why
the people who are going to the primary material that is really the only one available from China and looking at it tell me that it's not a pretty picture.
No, it's not. But remember, there's only, 300 people in the Shanghai region last night?
Oh, but China has done things that we can't do in this country.
The totalitarian state can protect itself.
We are not going to, not permitting people to leave their homes except for an hour a day or whatever it might be. It's not simply something that we seem prepared to do in this country to truly stem what might be a nationwide, worldwide outbreak. We're talking about a virus that has gone all over the globe in 3 months.
Journal of the Plague Year. Okay? Just a first perspective. Now, if you're working at J.P. Morgan and you watch your stock go down 30 points, and then you watch your leader have a heart procedure, do you say, you know what, I want to double down on my position?
I know. People look at the banks. They look at the energy complex.
Exxon had a meeting. People hated it.
And they say, these things are so cheap at this point.
Oh,
eventually,
so cheap.
This will pass. And I will be happy that I took a position at this point.
They're going to get historically cheaper, okay? Carnival Cruise. Carnival. And they don't like it when you call it cruise, okay? Wow, I don't like it when I take a cruise. Now, that stock is it. Let's look at that. That stock's at, 27? All right, yield 7. Any faith in that? Royal Caribbean, any faith?
Those are the heart of the storm here.
But those are big companies. We're big companies.
Yeah, they are.
And they hire. There's 2,000 people per workers. And from all different countries, but they work on these cruise ships. They are fabulous generators of jobs.
Right.
Guys, as you're talking, the president's making some comments. We're going to hear them in a moment as he is signing the $8.3 billion supplemental that passed the Senate yesterday, 96-1. He says, expects the markets to bounce back, says the Dow hasn't been that bad, says he'll have dinner with Brazilian leader Bolsonaro at Mar-a-Lago this weekend. He's not going to go to the CDC in Atlanta today as he had previously planned, and reiterates that the Fed should cut rates. which, of course, is a big topic of discussion today. Goldman out with a note about what they could do if they get to the zero lower bound.
Yeah.
They don't think negative rates are going to happen. They don't think there's support for it.
I mean, I hope not.
No, I hope not. That's a sign of tremendous weakness, which we don't want.
It's very, very difficult for your banking system.
Yes, and very difficult for savers. I mean, the people who are being attacked just by this are also the people who are trying to save. So I'm not included in that. What we want is a Manhattan Project to beat this, because it is. It's going to take a Manhattan Project. We all know this thing is mutating, all the things that you don't want to hear. You need a Manhattan Project. You know what, David? A second ago, I thought I reached for my coffee, but I reached for my 70% isopropyl alcohol wipes by mistake. Thank heavens they got a lid on them. We are in a troubled position. But if we had Washington saying, you know what, we are going to get the greatest minds in Alamogordo and we're going to solve this, I would like that.
There are others who say that we really want to act as China did. We need to shut down things, and there's an unwillingness to do that given the economic ramifications of doing so.
The American way has never been totalitarian, but the American way has always been ingenuity.
But there are still lots of people getting on planes going all over the place. There are still people.
I'm not saying that. I think the schools should be shut, but who am I?
So
I think
the virus will potentially spread as a result of that. Thankfully,
you do not believe that we can't.
Most people will be fine.
What we do in this country is we take advantage of the great minds, the ingenuity, and we win wars. And this is a war.
Okay.
And we win them.
Okay.
And we will win. We will win.
Who are you speaking for there?
United States of America.
Do you have some sort of official title that I'm unaware of? Are you mustering the troops here? Maybe you should.
Hey, my dad was a citizen. He went to war. What was he? He wasn't a soldier until he was a soldier. I'd like to think that we can all play a role in trying to figure out what would do it that would encourage.
Some people tell you, wash your hands.
Well, I know,
if you in the slightest way are sick, don't go out.
If you focus on a war, the countries that we beat were totalitarian countries, and we did it with ingenuity. Why can't we do it again? That's all I'm saying. I have every single biotech guy that I talk to, because I have them all on Mad Money. By the way, happy 15th, David. Self-congratulatory.
It's Mad Money's 15th anniversary today, and Jim's going to help ring the bell.
So important. And what I see are people at these companies, they all feel it. I had Sangamo on yesterday. They feel it. They think that they can get the minds together. Len Schleifer.
Does that mean in some way that it's going to be faster than the year and year and a half that we continue to hear is truly expected for a real vaccine for this virus?
It's not the bubonic plague. We may miss a year. We may miss a year. You heard Dr. Fauci say to the president, stop being so optimistic about the vaccine. This is a man who helped solve AIDS, which, by the way, was supposed to kill millions. Killed way too many. But we beat it.
Fauci was on the Today Show this morning, said that there were some missteps in getting tests out early due to technical issues, but that's being remedied as the CDC gets to work on a heightened level. Meanwhile, the president last night on Fox at this town hall talked about how the coronavirus may impact the economy.
We were set to hit 30,000 on the Dow. This is a number that nobody ever even came close to. And already we have the number, and even though it's down 10 or 11%, it's still the highest it's ever been by far. It certainly might have an impact. At the same time, I have to say, people are now staying in the United States, spending their money in the U.S., and I like that. We could have a very long-term plan. We hope that doesn't happen, but we have plans for every single possibility, and I think that's what we have to do. We hope it doesn't last too long.
We're going to talk to Larry Kudlow in a moment about the jobs number, but also about what stimulus is warranted, ex-Fed, in this country.
I thought Jason Furman's piece this morning from advisor to President Obama in the op-ed section of the Wall Street Journal was very good about what has to. You have to put money in people's pockets. A lot of the people who are going to lose their jobs, again, the job number here is very good, are people who work at institutions that are thinly capitalized. And they work hard, and they need something to tide them over until they get back on their feet and find another job in another area of the economy. Does that make me a part of the administration?
I just am trying to listen, like everybody, you try and connect all the dots, understand what's going on in the financial markets and with the virus itself, the likelihood of a recession. You heard Jeff Gundlach yesterday, somebody who was always worth listening to.
Right. Look, I think you can be. Look, I'm not saying that he is crying wolf. I'm not saying he's Chicken Little. I am saying it's good to know the negative case, and let's try to avoid the negative case, not just say it has to be. I mean, we keep coming back. When I was a little boy, you couldn't go outside. Why? Because of polio. And then Salk solved polio. He wasn't supposed to be able to solve polio. The hell? You're supposed to get polio. Imminent. That's positive.
So you're looking for
an American scientist.
Without a doubt.
You're looking for a Jonas Salk to come around.
You bet I am.
Make it happen.
Because they happened before. They had a guy named Fauci.
And it will happen again.
But right. I'm just saying it's
a year and a half.
Yes, it might. But ingenuity will trump totalitarianism any day of the week.
Nobody argues that. We're not. That's not an argument that's going on here.
You haven't thought about totalitarianism?
No, I'm not saying.
Let's get to a break here. We'll get Cramer's Mad Dash countdown to the opening bell. There's a lot to get to this morning as we take another look here at futures close to session lows. We'll get to AMD, Costco, Starbucks, Twitter, JP Morgan, and Diamond's condition, obviously, in a moment.
Welcome back to Squawk on the Street. What a tumultuous week for the markets. We'll get the beginning of our final trading day about 10 minutes from now. Let's get to a mad dash. Costco reported.
Yes. Now, Costco reported an astonishing number. I think you have to use Costco and AMD as a measure of the decline. AMD had a fabulous meeting. But to go back to Costco, you can see that this is a company that has been able to weather pretty much any storm. The thing is, it's so strong, David, that there was actually a question about the balance sheet and whether it would allow them, with the current interest rate environment, to think about a buyback capital structure. How many companies are in that great shape? Rich Galanti, who is the CFO and a genius at finance, did not deny that there could be something. We're going to split a special dividend. Talk about a company that is crushing it all over the globe, including Shanghai.
Including in China, yeah, where they had obviously very strong sales until the virus. But they're also a beneficiary here of everybody going out and
double digit
buying a lot of things.
Their biggest problem? Stocking all of the merchandise that they need, double digit all over the place. Of course, they have people working around the clock. They have a tremendous structure of dedicated people. Almost as dedicated, David, as Cliff Mason from Mad Money, who's our writer, and Mark Hoffman, who greenlighted Mad Money, our CEO, chairman, all of whom are here because it's our 15th. And, of course, Regina Gilgan, our unbelievable executive producer.
Yes, you have an incredible team that I like to pick my people from occasionally.
You steal people.
Which I appreciate that you let me do that.
That's your MO.
It is. Yeah, you know me. You steal all of my CEO guests, and I occasionally take a member of your great staff.
True.
To try to help me do my job.
But you can go poach my wife, who's here,
Lisa. Oh, she's here too. Lisa's
yeah.
here as well. And Brian Steele.
But
yeah,
no, my team is what makes me.
A great group here today.
I am very lucky to have an amazing team and be at an amazing network.
Yes.
And I don't want to belabor that on a day when I know people are going to lose money. But
no.
I am proud of Regina Gilgan, Cliff Mason, Mark Hoffman, Lisa Detweiler, who puts up with me during this period.
We are proud of you as well and the incredible work that you've done here for so long, Jim. It is still amazing for me to watch you
Thank you every day coming in here
and then continuing your darn day.
Today's just another day.
Today is just another day. All right, stick around. We got a lot more Squawk on the Street, of course. This gentleman to my right will be ringing the opening bell to celebrate that 15 years of Mad Money. Oh, and don't forget, we're going to open, and it doesn't look good, at least if you're long this market right now. Things can change. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Squawk on the Street, live from the financial capital of the world, 15 years of Mad Money. Jim's going to ring the opening bell in just about 6 minutes. The president, meantime, has signed the $8.3 billion coronavirus emergency spending package and made some comments as well. Let's take a listen.
And something. I guess some of you are coming along, I assume. Is that right?
No.
You going?
There's a crew out at Andrew's Way Market.
Okay. So we're signing the $8.3 billion. I asked for $2.5 billion, and I got $8.3 billion, and I'll take it. Okay. So are. $8.3 billion. Doing very well. But it's an unforeseen problem. What a problem. Came out of nowhere. But we're taking care of it. We have big news on the ship. A lot of things are happening on the ship. People are being tested right now. And I just spoke to the governor of California, Gavin Newsom. We had a good conversation. We're both working on the ship together. It's close to 5,000 people, so big ship. We're doing testing on those people. Okay? Could I have those other papers I'm going to sign, please? These are additional papers relative to various things. So this is it. Do you have anything to say to the press?
I just want to make it clear that in terms of tests, we have provided all the tests to the state of Washington and the state of California that they've asked for. The production and shipping of tests that we've talked about all week is completely on schedule. All of the CDC tests, the tests that are available to test up to 75,000 people, CDC has shipped to America's public health labs. Those are out. Then IDT, the private contractor working with CDC to ship to the private sector and hospitals, has already shipped enough tests for 700,000 tests. And the remaining lots are arriving at CDC this morning for quality control and should get out as we forecast this weekend. And then next week, we'll keep ramping up production. So as many as 4 million tests next week are going to be driving forward. So everything is on schedule for the tests.
Mr. President, why aren't you going to CDC today?
He's actually sent me. I'm going to go down.
You could tell that.
Yeah.
We may go. There was, they thought there was a problem at CDC with somebody that had the virus. It turned out negative, so we're seeing if we can do it. But yesterday afternoon, we were informed that there may have been a person with the virus, and they now find out that that was a negative test. They tested the person very fully, and it was a negative test. So I may be going. We're going to see if they can turn it around with Secret Service. We may be going. Here, Steve, this is for you after covering you so well. First time I've ever done that to a reporter.
How big a hit to the economy are you expecting?
Well, job numbers just came out and they're incredible. The job numbers were tremendous, and we picked up close to 80,000 new jobs from last report. And if you add that up, it's over 350,000 jobs. Job numbers just came out a little while ago. And they were shocking to the people that were analyzing them.
You expect more gyrations in the stock market?
I think, you know, a lot of people are staying here, and they're going to be doing their business here. They're going to be traveling here, and they'll be going to resorts here. And, you know, we have a great place. It's where so foreign people come, but we're going to have Americans staying home instead of going and spending their money in other countries. And maybe that's one of the reasons the job numbers are so good. We've had a lot of travel inside the USA.
Do you think the Congress or your administration need to take more action to diminish the risk of recession?
Well, all we can do is do what we do. I mean, we're getting a lot of business from people staying, in other words, which I've always liked anyway. You've known that for a long time. But people are staying here and spending their money here as opposed to going to Europe and other places.
That is the president signing an $8.3 billion measure to help tackle the coronavirus outbreak, which has now killed 12 people in the United States and infected more than 200. Of course, the number of cases around the world exceeded 100,000 today for the first time. We're going to get the opening bell in about 30 seconds. We're going to go to Jim, who is actually at the balcony today as Mad Money rings the bell with 15 years to celebrate. Jim, congratulations.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you very much. When we started, I was taller than everyone.
Tell me when. What? Tell me when.
No hugging.
No hugging. I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. Sorry, I had a little joy. No joy allowed. Forgot that. Gentlemen, David?
Yes.
Well, I would have thought, in my honor, you would wear a tie.
I forgot.
You forgot.
It's
okay.
Friday. I don't wear ties.
Jim, if we all rotate, we can get the set in the back.
Okay. I am proud of both teams, not just one team. But I love you guys. Thank you very
much. If we
all
look up at that camera, we can get the set in the back.
Oh, I get it.
Fantastic.
All right, Jim, we are so proud of you, me and David especially, and everything that you have done for investors around the world with this concept that you created 15 years ago at the NASDAQ, by the way. It's LifeSci Acquisition Corp, a blank check company targeting the biopharma and healthcare industries. So we're down 750 to start the day, David. 10-year did, once again, crack below 70 basis points, record low 69.2 basis points. And that's going to be the focus today. As breath is, we got three S&Pers in the green.
Yeah, it's shocking to see the move, of course, down. I think, you know, when we crossed the 1% threshold just a couple of days ago, I think people thought they'd never seen anything like that. In fact, they said that. Jeff Ubben, who I spoke to, the longtime value investor, activist investor, talking about how it's thrown the ability to actually be a value investor into real question. Well, at 0.70 or 0.693, which I think is our low, 692, even more so, the question then becomes, is this in some way pressure the Fed to potentially act, to catch up to the bond market? The two-year also, of course, has been setting new records as well. On the positive, as you know, Carl and Diana Olick will certainly tell us, mortgage rates are certain to adjust over time, much lower, one would expect. Certainly could be seen as one bright spot. But there is some question here about even manipulation in the bond market. Sounds hard to believe, but the liquidity may not quite be what you expect it is, at least according to what I'm hearing. There are certainly those who benefit from that. As for the impact on stock, we've got the S&P down over 2.6% right now. And as you just said, Carl, it's hard to find any green on my screen at this point.
Indeed. Got the VIX once again approaching 48, which is going to be a focus as well today. Interesting, there's been a few calls out. J.P. Morgan says the effects of COVID-19 are going to be large, in their words, but temporary, and that once it subsides, the fiscal and monetary response, David, will last. It's not going to get yanked back at the last minute, and as a result, they are overweighting equities and underweighting bonds.
There is this belief that, again, that of course, and as we all hope, this will pass and pass relatively quickly, and then we will be left with a landscape that looks very different in terms of rates even lower than we'd ever anticipated. Hard to imagine if you'd had an economy that's adding as many jobs as we just reported this morning, you would have rates anywhere near where they are. But this is in anticipation of what we know is going to be a potentially severe slowdown overall in activity. Carl, but I think there's another question, which is when you do have a recession, which seems more likely, certainly, than it did even a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, you know, what do you find out? It's that old Warren Buffett line, when the tide goes in, you find out who's actually swimming naked. And so what do you uncover that you were not aware of, and what impact does that have, I think, is a key question many people in the financial markets are also asking and worrying about. Not that we're going to have a financial crisis necessarily, anything like we did in 2008, but there is sort of concern, you know, that we will find some real weak spots that we're not anticipating at this point.
Yeah. Baycrest has done some work this morning. If we close down more than 2.8%, you're looking at a pattern that you have not seen since 87. Five consecutive daily moves of 2.8 or more. Hasn't happened since October of 87. Even in the tech bubble, Jim, even in 08, we never saw 5 days, consecutive days, with those kinds of moves.
The market was very broken in 1987. Remember the week before Black Monday was one of the worst weeks ever. There was no liquidity, and there was no liquidity because of portfolio insurance. The market had been up, obviously, sold at 29 PE in March of that year. Went down all the way down to 13 PE. David, you mentioned manipulation. There was not manipulation, but just inability of institutions to be able to handle sell orders. That was at the heart, because remember, there was no recession whatsoever.
You're talking 1987 here, when Carl, the crash.
When Carl's talking about the last time that we had something like this. And to me, if you are, most of the people have now become, 60% of people are now index people. There are stocks right now that I would buy. I know that that's said with great trepidation because you don't know what money's going to be like. But as Warren Buffett said, when the Dow was at 8,000,
yeah,
it could go lower. But there were some buys.
What were interest rates in 1987?
Seven.
And yeah, what was market seven. Structure like, right?
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't. I was in cash for 87 because of Karen Kramer, which was a remarkable moment for me. But we were short J&J, which is an unbelievable company. How stupid that was. But we ended up making about 100%. It was puts. And I think that right now I look at things like Costco, which I just talked about, and I say, you know what? Do I want to start buying Costco? You know what? Okay. I'm willing.
Well,
you can't get into Costco. Look at what Lisa Su has done with Advanced Micro. That stock is up.
JPM, yeah, JP Morgan ups BJ's wholesale to its focus list today. So there's pockets of anticipated strength.
Absolutely. So let's just not give up all hope.
The virus volatility, of course, continues to weigh on the street. The president said last night that he hopes it won't have a long-term economic impact, but said they have, quote, plans for every single possibility. Who better to talk about that and the jobs number than the National Economic Council Director Larry Kudlow, who joins us from Washington. Larry, good morning. Good to see you.
Thank you, Carl. Appreciate it very much.
Let's start with the jobs number. It's a good one, as we know, 273. We've been talking to the desk this morning about how relevant it is, given what we appear to be heading into. What do you think?
Well, I think it's very relevant. Look, this is a gigantic number. And 273, by the way, plus 85,000 jobs in the prior 2 months in an upward revision. So the total is 358,000. And that's a gigantic number. So my point here is that we have argued, I believe the economy is fundamentally sound, even getting stronger through the winter months, excluding the virus problem. We'll talk about it in a moment. But we're coming in with a strong economic growth base across the board, jobs and employment and wages, and even some improvement in manufacturing, tremendous improvement in housing. Let's not forget low interest rates will be a positive going forward. All I'm saying is, Carl, we know that future growth is going to slow down, certainly in certain sectors. We get that. But coming in with a strong base like this should give us much more confidence about what the future holds in relation to the human tragedy side, which, of course, is the coronavirus. I've argued and I will continue to argue economic problems are going to be temporary and short-lived. The virus is not going to last forever. Human side, a lot of difficulties there. I get that. I understand that. But still, we have a strong economic base. And to be honest with you, our pro-growth supply-side policies from President Trump are working.
Well, let me ask you, first of all, Larry, thank you so much for coming on again, always being faithful. There's a piece today by Jason Furman, and I know you know him and I know him, and he's a smart fellow, and he's saying Congress should send you $1,000, another $500 for each of your children as soon as possible, talking about multiple stimulus, $350 billion, panic or intelligent?
Well, look, Jason is a longtime friend and a very smart fellow. I don't agree with his point of view. I don't think we should just be throwing money and throwing cash in these short-term rebates kind of models that have never really worked in the past. And by the way, we don't even know. I mean, let me come back to this. Can we possibly do this, Jimmy, fact by fact, day by day? Because we don't know what the magnitude of the economy might be in terms of a slowdown. We don't actually know what the magnitude of the virus is going to be, although, frankly, so far it looks relatively contained, and we don't think most people, I mean, the vast majority of Americans are not at risk for this virus. But in terms of what my friend Jason Furman said, look, NEC and Treasury, Steve Mnuchin and I and staffs have been talking about this, and we would prefer a targeted approach, a rather micro approach, if you understand. Let's think about individuals who might lose paychecks because they had to stay home if they get the virus. Let's think about small businesses that might get hurt by this. Perhaps we would look at some sectors. I know you all talked about airlines. We met with the airline executives a couple days ago in the Oval. We would like to be targeted and timely, Jimmy, not the gigantic macroeconomic fix. I think that's the issue. And we really have to wait for more information, almost on a day-by-day basis, before we can take action. One quick fast point, Jim. I don't mean to filibuster here, but John Taylor was on from Stanford University earlier on your network, and he made a very good point. Let's not forget, we have automatic stabilizers in the budget. Okay, if the unemployment rate should go up, and right now it's still 3.5%, 50-year low. But if it does go up, unemployment insurance, food stamps, various welfare-related programs, those are automatic. You don't have to go for additional appropriations. So I just don't want to panic. I don't want to panic on the economy, which looks sound. I don't want to panic on the virus, which, frankly, most Americans are not at risk. And I don't want to panic on policy measures. Let's try to be calm and not overreact.
And Larry, it's David. I certainly understand that. But, you know, it depends who you talk to. As you point out, of course, it's very difficult to know everything at this point. There's so many open-ended questions. But when I speak to people who are reviewing the primary data and material that's available from China, where, of course, the outbreak has been by far the worst, they're not particularly sanguine on the U.S. response at this point. They tell me, in fact, if we wanted to actually contain the virus, we would need to do what China has done. We seem unwilling to do that for any number of reasons, including the impact it would have on our economy. And I wonder, does the administration take that into account? Are there simply things you're unwilling to do that perhaps should be done to truly contain this virus, which, by the way, many people say, Larry, it's very hard to say whether it really is in any way contained or whether we are not all at risk?
Well, I'm not sure where you're going on that. Look, immediately in January, against the advice of a lot of health professionals, President Trump automatically put on travel bans with respect to China. And then we instituted quarantines for the people, Americans coming back from China, and foreign nationals. We have screening procedures set up everywhere. We know there's problems in northern Italy. We know there's problems in South Korea. We know this thing is spreading a bit in Europe. We get that. So that's why we're setting up screening procedures. We have travel advisories for a lot of these places. So, look, we took President jumped out fast, took very bold steps, as I said, in some cases, overriding the advice of some of his advisors. Now, my reading, and this is very difficult, David, and if you disagree, I respect that. The numbers coming out of China appear to be easing, quite substantially easing. The, the ratio of people who are catching the virus and the volumes come way down. In fact, everything's come way down. There is also reports from China. And again, the numbers out of China, we always have to question that. I understand, Lord knows. But I'm just saying, it looks like people are returning to work. It looks like factories are starting to reopen. We've had people like Tim Cook and Starbucks and others say that. I don't want to bet the ranch on it. All I'm saying is the numbers we have look to be improving in China. Most of the problem now, the accelerations, are outside of China, and we're keeping a close watch on that. We've got some issues here with respect to the cruise ship and the nursing home and all that. But, David, we're doing everything we can do. We got the test kits now out in huge size. Millions of people are going to be tested. Folks should not run around grabbing these masks, because that should be for the professional healthcare people. The masks themselves don't really work for individuals. And here's the other thing. You know, I talked to Tony Fauci. I've known him many years. I think he's an extremely capable guy. If you get it, 80% come out of it with no problem. Now, pre-existing conditions, yeah, you've been very cautious. Elderly people, you know, we had the problems in some of these senior assistance homes. Those things, you have to exercise common sense and stay away as much as you can. But for most people, if you're healthy, you should go to work. Go about your business. That's our advice. And even regarding transportation, you know, which may be hit. The airlines, they're very calm about it, but they're in trouble in some of their numbers. Look, domestic flight, for the most part, is in good shape. And if you stay away from some of the travel warning countries, international flight, likewise. So I don't want to downplay anything. We worry about the effect on human beings, for heaven's sake. But I'm just saying, let's not overreact. Yeah. In many ways,
I hear that,
America
Larry, but a
should
lot of the,
stay at work. We should stay at work.
Health professionals that I speak to, Scott Gottlieb, the former FDA commissioner, would say very different things, in particular about Seattle and about the government response that needs to actually take place and how we need to be a lot more formidable in our response. And that statements like the ones you just
made are actually
encouraging people
Scott's
to do things
guy.
That they shouldn't and that will actually cause the spread of the virus as opposed to it stopping.
Well, I don't, that's not what I, look, Scott Gottlieb is a brilliant guy and he's a friend of mine. With respect to Seattle, all right, that would be a place you would avoid for now. And Gavin Newsom, Governor Newsom, declaring California an emergency state, especially Northern California. I understand that. Avoid it. Exercise common sense. But the rest of the country is not suffering from those kinds of breakouts, at least not yet. I don't want to suggest it might not occur in the future. We're just trying to do this a day at a time, a fact at a time, if you will. And really, the overriding numbers, most Americans are not at risk. And as I say, 80% of Americans, if you get the infection, are going to come out just fine. Some people have it and don't even know it because they get through it in a week or two. And I guess one last point, we had the biotech and pharma companies in with the president in the cabinet room a couple of days ago. They're talking about therapies, medicine, coming out this spring or early summer. So these are all positive developments. I don't want to reduce the importance of this story, but I'm just saying with common sense backed up by some of the statistics, I would say if you're healthy, if you're on the younger side particularly, you should go about your business and not be afraid. So others may disagree, and I understand that. I'm respectful of their views, but that's the way I see it.
But Larry, I know that I feel personally it doesn't mean that schools should close. My school district just closed. I get that. But I want to ask you something. When you and I were partners, we used to try to think as big as possible. I want to ask you, wouldn't you right now agree with me that if we could have a Manhattan Project for this, give some $1 billion to the brilliant people in our country and say, solve this, that that's better than the totalitarian way that the Chinese are solving their problems?
Yes. Absolutely, Jimmy. I'm going to take some water. My mouth is dry. Sorry. We're going long, and I'd love to go long with you, but I need a little water.
But you know, now, Larry, we have ingenious people, but are they getting together and doing the things that you and they're talking? How about we put them in a place and solve this, Larry?
You're spot on, Jimmy. You know, both the thought, the action, and the spirit. Look at we had these pharma and biotech companies in, I don't know, Wednesday or Tuesday, I don't recall. It's been a long week. But they talked among themselves. They're coordinating and cooperating among themselves. Some remarkable developments are happening from the private sector. You're right, not the government, it's private sector. Therapies will be available late this spring, summer. Medicine, in other words. That's terrific. They're beginning the experimental stages of the vaccine testing. That's going to take longer, perhaps a year, year and a half. But to your point, this is being done not by state edict, as in China, not by closing down every city in the country, which China did at least temporarily. Maybe they had to. I don't want to go there. But it's being done by the American private sector with our technology, which is the best in the world. And again, the president laid down immediately, you know, travel restrictions, travel bans and quarantines to deal with the worst part of this thing and try to keep it as contained as best as possible. I just think the private sector is going to solve this disease as they have, Jimmy, in the past, as you well know. That is what Americans do. This is true not just for this coronavirus. This is true for all manners of technology breakthroughs, artificial intelligence, quantum computing, 5G infrastructures and the like. We are the world's leading technology. We are a free country that believes in free enterprise. President Trump in his Davos call it the American model of enterprise, Jimmy. And, you know, you can boil that down. Tax cuts and deregulation, sure, terrific stuff, better trade deals. There's an export boom coming once this virus dies down later in the year. But most of all, we believe success and entrepreneurship should be rewarded, not penalized. And that's what drives these incentives for these great companies.
Larry, it won't surprise you to know that there's been some frustration with comments you've made, largely on our air. One, that the virus was almost airtight in terms of containment. The other was that Americans, you said, should consider buying the dip in stocks. That was 9% ago. Are you going to refrain from making comments like that in the future?
I don't know. Are you asking me a question on that?
I guess, will you say that again? Should Americans buy the dip now?
Yes. Yes. Well, look, I don't do timing, but I will say this. Because of my belief that the American economy is sound, and actually during the past 3 years under President Trump, the American economy has improved. That is my view. I am an optimist. I think when you have these corrections in the market, I don't know what we're down. The latest quote is it was got down to 13%. A correction from the peak. I'm not sure where it is exactly now. Yes, I would say, as I will repeat my view, Carl, long-term investors should think seriously about buying these dips. That is my view. I will repeat that. If I'm not mistaken, on your network, pretty distinguished investor named Warren Buffett said the same thing. And I think other cool heads are saying that I want to be calm about this. So, yes, I'll repeat that. It's not a timing call. I'm not a tactical guy. Jimmy Cramer is, the best. He's the stock encyclopedia. But I would just say long run investors. Absolutely. And, Carl, regarding the containment issue, I will still argue to you that this is contained. It can't be airtight. We are, you look at the numbers here, and I know there are things in front of us, by itself, more testing is going to uncover more cases. But in a relative sense, relative to our population, relative to ordinary flus, I don't want to downgrade this thing. This can be a human tragedy for individuals who suffer or Lord knows who die. I've said that from day one, but I think it is relatively contained. Yes, I do.
It's much more serious than the flu, as you know, and it's a virus that spread all over the globe in the space of about 3 months. So it is certainly something that seems to avoid containment to some extent. My question, though, is about the economy.
To some extent. I want to stay with this. What the president said, what the vice president said, what our top experts say from CDC and elsewhere are really that these are the career health guys who are very good at this. All right. National infection risk is low. Average Americans should go about their business because the infection risk is low. There are exceptions, guidelines, as I say, elderly people, yes. Nursing homes, assisted living homes, I understand that. You have to exercise common sense. Washing your hands 15 times a day, using Kleenex when you cough and sneeze, just common sense stuff. But they've been covered.
Of course.
80% of the people who get this infection come out just fine. So I don't know what adjective you want to use, but I still think it's, we have this pretty well in hand.
Finally, Larry, economic activity certainly has slowed. Do you think the likelihood of a recession has increased dramatically?
David, where has it slowed?
Well, I can judge from the way that corporations are not sending people to go to meetings, that conferences are being canceled all over the place, that people are not going to school, not potentially going out as much as they might.
Corporate travel restrictions.
Yeah, corporate travel restrictions. I mean, things of that nature will have and take a toll over time.
All right. I accept that. I accept all those points. But look, You just had a remarkable jobs number with revisions, about 350,000, 350. Unemployment is 3.5%. You're actually seeing pickups in wages from this report. Manufacturing, construction, housing has been in a boom. Low interest rates, by the way, will help a good deal over time. I don't deny what you said, and I know events are being canceled, and I wish they wouldn't be canceled because I think there may be overreaction in certain cases. As I say, I still think healthy people should go about their business. So I don't want to say the future, to use Donald Rumsfeld's phrase, we have known unknowns. That's the future. That's the future, the contagion future, and matters related to that. I think economic growth in the next quarter will slow as a result of this. I acknowledge we have seen some modest disturbances in supply chain deliveries. I acknowledge that, although in general the ISMs look okay. I think we are in a very healthy economic position. We are going to see a slowdown. You are right about airline travel and conferences and related matters, but I don't think this is recessionary, and I don't think this is going to be catastrophic. I think, you know, strong economies will recover. And look, unlike the financial crisis and related matters, this one's not forever. This is going to run out of steam. This is not going to go on forever. And it's especially important that we get these remedies and therapies coming up. That's what the report from the biotech guys. So, yes, economic slowdown, yes, we expect that. More cases of contagion, yes, we expect that. But I think people should not overreact.
Larry, we appreciate your time as always, especially on days like today. We'll talk to you soon. Larry Kudlow. National Economic Council Director. There's a reason why he's on the cover of Business Week with the title The Optimist, Jim.
Right. Well, he is, and he's always been, and I think that there's room for optimism. Room for it. I think that a lot of the questions that David raised are front and center with why the interest rates are where they are and what we hear on the ground, which is that there are too many things being canceled for us to be able to be not sanguine, but not to be concerned. I don't want to use the term worry because no one ever was able to create anything positive over worry. We do have things. We want to try everything in hand. We want a monoclonal approach. That's what Regeneron's doing with Len Schleifer. And then we want vaccines for longer term. This three-part thing. I've been calling for more money to be sent to public health, more money to be sent to try to solve this, more than necessarily economic. But I understand. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Big anniversary show tonight.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's about the viewers, as always, and I'd like to celebrate, but we can do that some other time. We got things to do.
Congratulations again,
Thank
Jim.
You. Thank you.
We're so proud of you. Mad Money celebrating 15 years. Splunk and Elevest
yes,
tonight.
Yes, International Women's on
That's
Sunday.
Right. Very good. You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.